Good morning. It's Monday, April 29th. The war in the Middle East is now 206 days old. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. The war headlines continue to pull me in two directions. On the one hand, there is the war in Gaza, the war in Lebanon, and the broader battle with the Islamic Republic of Iran. On the other hand, there's the chaos on campus right now, and that cannot go unaddressed. So we're going to cover both here at the FDD Morning Brief. We can walk and chew gum, I think, and we can do it in about 20 minutes, 3 days a week. So if that's your thing, keep tuning in. Our guest this morning is Samer Sinjalawi. He is a member of the Palestinian Fatah faction. But before you jump to conclusions about his politics, he's an opponent of Mahmoud Abbas. He's a proponent of greater engagement with Israel, and he's closely associated with Mohammed Dahlan, the former security chief for Gaza under Yasser Arafat. He now lives in the UAE. Some people say that Dahlan could be a kingmaker for whoever takes over in Gaza. So we're going to speak to Samer, one of his close allies, shortly. Last week, as the chaos spread across America's college campuses, I came upon a remarkable tweet. Samuel Arian, a convicted financier of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, posted a picture of his wife at a Columbia University protest. "My wife, Nahla, in solidarity with the brave and very determined Columbia University students," he tweeted. She was seen sitting outside a tent on campus. For those unfamiliar, Samuel Arian was a professor at University of South Florida. In 2003, he was convicted of sending money to Islamic Jihad. He went to jail, and then he was deported to Turkey in 2015. Why was Samuel Arian's wife at Columbia? Good question. After I flagged his tweet, Al Arian blocked me from viewing his account, but you can still find the photo online if you're curious. I see a trend now. As I noted on Friday, a representative of a Virginia-based nonprofit called American Muslims for Palestine, or AMP, has appeared on a handful of campuses. In some cases, these people have led student chants. I was in Austin, Texas last week, and I happened to be there amidst campus protests as well. And guess what? Several people removed by security were also not students. In a few days, their names should be released, and I'm eager to see that list. I'm going to say this again. This is not spontaneous. This is not organic. The annihilationist rhetoric, anti-Semitism, hate speech, and violence, it's coordinated, folks. Federal, state, and university officials have to grapple with this. Failure to do so will have consequences, not for Israel, for this country, for America. Now for your headlines. Headline one, some good news here. The flotilla that Turkey planned to send to Gaza has failed to launch. Turns out, the West African nation of Guinea-Bissau would not allow two of its flagged vessels to take part in the effort to breach Israel's territorial waters. I would not be surprised if the insurance or reinsurance companies involved simply saw too much risk, and for good reason. The last flotilla led to a clash with Israeli naval commandos that was back in 2010. We should all be glad to not see that happen again. Oh, and one more Turkish initiative that also failed to launch. The country's strongman, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, just canceled his visit to Washington. He had been planning to come to the White House on May 9th. It's unclear if the two cancellations are related, but Erdogan should never have been invited in the first place. Turkey is a major headquarters for Hamas. The country remains a financial hub for Hamas finance. How Turkey remains part of NATO is still shocking to me. Headline two, fighting has intensified between Israel and Hezbollah. Okay, that's not major news. I know I talk all the time about dangers of a war in the north, but this time is different because Hezbollah's number two is now threatening to conquer the northern communities of Israel. Israel continues to warn that the IDF will have no choice but to battle Iran's top proxy in Lebanon. This rhetoric is getting spicy, and it comes amidst increased attacks by Hezbollah and more targeted attacks by the IDF against Hezbollah fighters and infrastructure. The tempo is picking up here, and that is rarely a good thing in the Middle East. The French government is trying to take the temperature back down, but it won't help unless Hezbollah withdraws to territory north of the Litani River, about 20 miles from the border, and that would allow roughly 100,000 displaced Israelis to return to their homes. Hezbollah is quite satisfied with the status quo, so that's not happening anytime soon. And headline three, the Israeli government is getting pushed and pulled right now between a possible hostage deal and a possible Rafah operation. Here we go again. Israelis are torn between these two war objectives, returning the hostages and destroying Hamas. Sadly, these two objectives are often in conflict with one another, and Hamas knows this, which is why the group released new signs of life of several hostages, in my view. They understood that the IDF was preparing for the final battle of Gaza, and so this is a last-ditch effort to save their own bacon, halal bacon, if you will, so to speak. It's even more complicated because right-wing minister Bezalel Smotrich says that if the government moves ahead with a deal on the table, which would only return 30 hostages at the most, he'll bolt from the coalition. So Netanyahu's in a pinch. One quick bit of good news, World Central Kitchen is back in Gaza. This is an important partner for Israel, given that it distributes aid and it is not connected to UNRWA or Hamas. Okay, it's now time to hear from Samer Sinjalawi. I met Samer in Jerusalem about a week ago. As I mentioned, he hails from the ruling Fatah faction, but he's not quite like the others in his party. We caught up with him last night at around midnight his time. Have a listen. Welcome, Samer Sinjalawi.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Great to have you with us. Great to have you with us. First, let me ask you this. You are a Jerusalem resident. How is the Arab community of Jerusalem holding up during this war?
It's difficult times. You know, Jerusalem is a mixed city. 40% of its residents are Palestinians. The others are Jews. And, you know, the war has created a lot of cocktail of feelings among everybody. And this reflected itself, especially at the first weeks of the war. But I can see that now everybody got used that Jerusalem has not really entered into this tension, especially in the previous month of Ramadan. The month of Ramadan has passed peacefully. There was no tension in the city, which is not usual. Everybody expected that lots of things will happen during the Ramadan because of the war, but I think we survived some kind of quiet times up till now. I think, you know, whatever happens in the war, we will still be living together in this city, and we need to train ourselves how to manage crises like this.
I think you're right, and I think that's the right message. Well, let me get into politics here with you a bit. You wrote an article for the New York Times back in December that made a lot of made a splash. You called for President Mahmoud Abbas to step down. He's a member of the party that you belong to, and yet you oppose him. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, whoever thinks that Abbas is an asset, he's totally mistaken. Abbas is a burden. He's a burden for Palestinians, he's a burden for even those from the American side who are still believing in him and supporting him, also from some kind of indirect support that he still gets from Israel, unfortunately. He's a burden because I don't think that we will be able to reach to Gaza without Hamas if we don't start with West Bank without Abbas. He is an element that keeps Palestinians away from being more moderate, pragmatic. He is a big obstacle that still plays a role into not managing the relations between Israelis and Palestinians in a correct way. So for me, the cornerstone for any change should be by him leaving the political life of Palestinians. He has been there for 19 years. He did not respect any kind of rights for the Palestinian people. If you don't respect the right of freedom of speech, if you don't respect the right of people participating in the political life, how can you claim to represent these rights in front of the other? It doesn't work. He needs to leave, and I am sure the new generation of leadership from the Palestinian side will be able to manage better the way out of this inconvenient situation for both Israelis and Palestinians.
I tend to agree with you on all of that. I'm surprised you didn't even mention corruption, because of that. That's, of course, something that comes up all the time. But maybe we can get to that in a little bit. But for now, let me ask you about the faction of Fatah that you do support. This is the faction that's associated with Mohammed Dahlan. He is, of course, based in the UAE, but he has a lot of influence in Gaza. How do you see his role playing out here as the Gaza situation clarifies and perhaps as some of the politics begin to play out in the West Bank as well?
Well, there was a poll that was organized inside Fatah yesterday, and it has shown that Dahlan is the most influential leader now, because all what he is able to do now in Gaza, he has focused in the humanitarian aid for Gazans. And that's what people need by the end of the day. They need something that really can change their lives, that can give them services and needs at the moment that they need it. So at the time that Abbas is, you know, providing us with a very stupid speech in the UN every year that has meaningless, every time he opens his mouth, he brings catastrophe to the Palestinian people, we find younger leaders like Dahlan who are doing a work that touches the lives of the people. And that's why he's gaining popularity now. We go back to the change that the Palestinians are requesting. When we say we need a change, we need to get rid of Abbas, because Abbas had brought corruption to the West Bank. The same time Hamas brought destruction over Gaza, and the Palestinians would like to get rid of both corruption in the West Bank and the destruction in Gaza. And they will sign in with any leadership that will bring them construction as an alternative way. The Palestinians would like to see hope. They would like to see a leadership that is able to manage the relations with the Israelis. All what we are seeing now is a confrontation that leads to nowhere. The best way to be able to achieve political progress, especially with the Israelis, and I know the Israelis very well, you cannot pressure Israelis. You can persuade Israelis. You can convince Israelis. And to be able to succeed in convincing Israelis that there is a chance for a political development, we need to touch their minds and their hearts. If we are able to do this, we will be able to progress. And trust me, Jonathan, I know you are very active in Washington. As a Palestinian, I really believe that the road towards political progress in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict does not go through Washington, D.C. or through London. It goes through Tel Aviv. I don't need to convince the Americans to pressure the Israelis. The Americans are at 10,000 kilometers away, and the Israelis are only at 10 kilometers away. I need to talk to the Israelis. I need to build bridges with the Israelis. This is the way that I can progress. And Abbas has been adapting to a broken strategy all these years. Only confrontation in the UN. And even he's creating crisis with the Americans, with the last attempt to pass a decision in the United Nations Security Council. If you know that there will be an American veto there, why do you create this theater? You know it's not going to work. I should be able to find a way that works, not to create a political campaign, a media, a show. This does not help us, nor it does help the Israelis.
Well, let me ask you about something else. I saw a tweet that you put out about the campus protesters that are happening here. You don't like their message. Why not?
I don't like the slogans. Honestly, it does not help Palestinian cause. And I am a very patriot Palestinian. And I know what helps us and what does not help us. These slogans of burn Tel Aviv or free Palestine from the river to the sea, these are anti-Palestinian slogans. There is no way that one day we will wake up and not find Israelis in this land, or the Israelis woke up one day, I don't find Palestinians. We need to find slogans that bring Israelis and Palestinians together. So these slogans don't help us. I was happy to see other scenes in these demonstrations. For example, Muslims and Jews praying together. or having seeing Jews there doing the Kabbalat Shabbat things and the Passover Seder. Well, there are some incidents within these demonstrations that created some kind of bridges between Israelis and Palestinians, Jews and Arabs. But the slogans that are anti-Israeli and anti-Palestinians, those I don't like and I call to stop and condemn. So in principle, protesting something in a peaceful way is good, but you need to be very smart in raising the right slogan. And I can see only one slogan that works. Release the hostages and stop the war. This is the slogan that everybody should be raising. This is the slogan that helps both Israelis and Palestinians.
Well, I'd like to see more people from the Fatah faction say that. Last question for you. What I saw in Jerusalem, we talked about your ideas for widening the Abraham Accords. You said you could see the Palestinians being part of this in some shape or form. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have noticed, for example, when the Iranians has launched their attack against Israel with the rockets and the drones, one of the Arab states that stood in trying to defend Israel was Jordan, despite the tensions over Gaza. But Jordan has proven that at the times of crisis, when the Iranians attack the Israelis, they have a duty of defending Israel, because defending Israel is defending the whole region. I would like to see a Palestinian state that becomes the best ally for Israel. At times of crisis, we stand up and try to defend Israel. This is the road that will create different dynamics. I would like to see now, after the war in Gaza, regional dynamics that bring the Saudis, bring the whole Arab world, bring the whole Muslim world to a table where we start discussing with the Israelis not only political development, but security arrangements that include some kind of a Palestinian entity. We can call it whatever is convenient. We can discuss the details. Nobody can force the other into accepting something that he is not convinced in. But with these dynamics, a Palestinian entity, a Palestinian state can be another insurance for the security of Israelis. I feel I have a role in this, and it will take a lot of time until we can convince the Israelis that the Palestinians are adapting into a strategy that puts the Israeli security at its basis out of a Palestinian interest, out of my own interest, not doing a favor to anybody. But this is a different region that we'd like to build, a region that finally accepts and integrates Israel as a genuine part of the region. Finally, Israel can find itself with open relations with all the Arab and Muslim world, a very warm peace, something that until now we can see that it's not really very much stable. There are a lot of agreements between Israel and some countries like Egypt. But still, this relation between Egypt and Israel did not reach to a warm peace. It is a very cold peace. So we would like to create this. And it's not illusions. It's not dreams. It's possible. It just needs us as the Palestinians to start the first steps towards Israelis. And I am sure the more we come closer to the Israelis will be able to come closer to us. We need to initiate the first steps by changing the Palestinian political system, by changing the Palestinian strategy, started talking directly to the Israelis, trying to persuade them and not to pressure them, and to identify that my target is not to defeat the Israelis. My target is to defeat the fear inside the Israelis. This is my real challenge. My opponent, my enemy is the fear inside the Israelis, and it is a genuine fear.
Okay, well, that is a vision that we don't hear too often. Samer Sinjalawi, thank you very much for joining the FTD Morning Brief.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Okay, here's what FTD has on tap for you today. On the newest episode of FTD's Foreign Policy, Mark Dubowitz, FTD CEO, and Princeton's Bernard Heichel join FTD's founder and president, Cliff May, for a deep dive on Saudi normalization with Israel. FTD experts have been playing a role, an active role, in conceptualizing and socializing the Abraham Accords realignment. Mark has traveled to Saudi Arabia more than 10 times over the past 2.5 years, meeting the most senior Saudi leaders and providing innovative ideas for Israeli-Arab cooperation. I've joined him on a few of those trips. Catch this Foreign Policy episode on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Well worth a listen. In a recent piece in Town Hall, FTD's Natalie Econow makes the case for why Washington should clip Qatar's media wing by going after Al Jazeera. She provides American and European precedents for sanctioning and limiting news organs controlled by foreign adversaries. As the friction between freedom of speech and disinformation becomes glaringly apparent, Natalie poses some great questions about Al Jazeera and the terror-sponsoring country of Qatar. FTD's Iran program has been tracking a recent uptick in violent crackdowns on Iranian women following the Supreme Leader's recent directive to punish women who don't wear their hijab in public spaces across Iran. FTD's Iran protest tracker regularly updates and documents the thousands of demonstrations against the regime since the murder of Mahsa Amini in September of 2022. So do check that out as well. That's it for today, folks. Read our expert analysis on our website, FTD.org. Read our quick takes on X at FTD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at FTD.org/invest. Tune in Wednesday for another episode of the FTD Morning Brief. We'll have social media phenom Loay Al-Sharif on the program. He's a Yemeni who tweets in Hebrew, Arabic, and English, and his message is one that I wish more people embraced. See you then. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FTD.